Cycle. Welcome to the 1 o'clock no sour haha funny hour. We are back on the no sour haha funny power hour. What is it, Greg?
The no sour fun time haha power hour.
Moving Wisconsin forward, one joke at a time, this is Kristen Bry with As Goes Wisconsin.
Yada, yada, yada.
Hello, Wisconsin!
Hello, Wisconsin! Welcome to the No Sour Fun Time Ha Ha Power Hour.
Oh, she did it.
I got it. This is the 1 o'clock hour where we have some fun. We shed ourselves of the heavier topics. We don't make Jane cry, and we highlight some human interest stories and fun things that are happening around Wisconsin. And so our guest for this first segment is Tania Fisher, who's back. This is their second time on the show. She's an educator, an activist, an ASICS ambassador, and the director of health and wellness for SocialX MKE, which is a diversity, equity, and inclusion consulting group. And they have a very fun event coming up in April that I wanted her to come talk to us about. Welcome back, Tania.
Yeah, hi. Thank you for having me.
So tell us about Inspire Her.
Okay, so Inspire Her was created last year, so this is our second annual. It was created to highlight women of color and to celebrate our health, our wellness, and to educate our physical, emotional well-being. So we have a number of sessions, panel discussions, fireside chats that I'm super excited about.
And it's April 9th, right?
It is March 11th. Oh, Saturday, March 11th.
Where did I get April 9th from? I was looking at something on the website and I grabbed April 9th. Scratch that. Ignore it.
Yeah.
March 11th. It's much sooner.
Yes, very soon. 2 weeks. So Saturday, March 11th, and it will be at Direct Supply, the Northside campus. So it's a beautiful event. It's really exciting.
And so what, from last year, what went well that you feel like what was like your most memorable parts from last year that made you want to do the event again?
I think just the connection between women and being able to be very vulnerable with each other. I think that was something that was something that resonated with me. And that's why we wanted to make sure that we brought it back. We do have different sessions this year. So there is some spanking new things to be on the lookout for. And then there's some things that just stuck and worked really well that we'll be keeping in for this year.
So what does the schedule look like?
So we'll open up with a fireside chat about the beauty within. I know it's very hard to look at yourself and look at social media and to be able, you know, to see yourself, your natural beauty as being okay and more than okay, like being acceptable and feeling great within yourself. So we're going to talk about that. And then we have a affirmation session. We have some meditating sessions. We also have some professional development ways. So for women about investing and how they can invest in themselves and how women are becoming the breadwinners in their households now and how we could just tap in and get more information on that. And then we have more breakout sessions about protecting yourself. So we'll actually have some like techniques in ground, physical techniques for women to learn and know what to look out for while protecting themselves. And then we'll end up with the boss up panel discussion for all these women bosses out here. They'll get to discuss things they went through because they wasn't always a boss. So things that they went through to get to that status, things that they barriers they still may be overcoming within that. And I love how that just like wraps up everything and puts a nice little bow on top of it. Everybody feeling good and high.
Absolutely.
Tania, I'm so glad you're having a physical protection aspect to your event, because even 30 years ago, when I was doing stories about women taking self-defense classes and things like that, and I took one myself, women just aren't encouraged to do that. And the practice of punching something, or it's just, there was one mother-daughter couple in this class that I was in, and they would go, p-p-p-p-p-p. So it's important that women can embrace their own ability to protect themselves, I guess, is my greater point.
Exactly. And I think what really made us want to feature that as a breakout session is I've been hearing so many women being attacked while running, in which you guys know I'm a runner. Yep. So that is something. And I'm advocating for other women to run. And that's really scary. So I'm glad that even myself, I'll be able to learn some techniques and see what I need to be looking out for, some like runner safety and just like in public safety, just, you know. Yeah, so I'm excited for it for sure.
And also the first session you listed off as far as the beauty within, I don't think this made its way to Instagram, though it exists on Instagram too. But my TikTok feed this weekend was just full of this new filter. It's called like bold glamour on TikTok. Oh, and it doesn't look like a filter. Like if you put your hand between your face and the camera, it doesn't like go onto your hand, but it changes your face and it looks like a real person, but it's just like you amped up. Like you, if you looked like an Instagram model, right? And the makeup and everything like that. And I could not escape this video and this filter over the weekend. And that was what so much of the videos that I saw was, is like, this is screwing with our brains of what we're supposed to, like what we could look like if we just tweaked this, if we just wore makeup like that. And I saw one video where she's like, I tried to do my makeup like the app and I feel like I look really good right now. And then she put on the filter and she's like, and now I feel like crap. Because it was just like, it's just like, it's perfection to a something that no one actually looks like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's crazy. Like, even I think before I post something, you know, like swiping to see which filter I need, because I'm just like me naturally, like, no, people shouldn't see me like that. Or even my, you know, like right now, this is all natural. No.
I think you look beautiful, Tania.
Thank you. Or even, I just made a transparency post. Like, I post, I just ran, but like I'm bloated all the time. So I have a gut hanging over like my leggings and all this stuff. You know, it's just, so yes, I need to attend. This is all stuff I need to be in. So that's
it's such a good variety of topics and all coming back to physical health, mental health. And so we're talking to Tania Fisher, who is the health and wellness director for SocialX MKE, and they have an event coming up on March 11th called Inspire Her, which is their second annual health and wellness conference for women. And which event are you, or which session are you most looking forward to?
Honestly, the session that I love the most is our meditation session.
Okay.
It is so beautiful. Like, we turn down the lights, and Direct Supply does a really good job of like making the stage look all lighty, like purple and orange undertones. And it's just really beautiful to have all the women in there kind of on like one accord and just like quiet and just, you know, thinking about positive things that for the rest of the day, like what we want to see and, you know, what we want to see in the rest of our lives. I just think it's just so powerful in a room of like 50 women, you know, to all hear that. That personally is like my favorite, but I'm really looking forward then today, like on Saturday, I'll be looking forward to hearing the Protect Her series.
Tania, I would love to do a mass meditation session like that, but I know I would be the one who would fall asleep.
Oh, and that's, I encourage it.
Jane just starts snoring in the corner.
Exactly. It's going to be like, who's snoring? It's breaking our zen, you know?
Yeah, our men's one was very powerful and beautiful. And a lot of men were like, man, I was so relaxed. I was about to fall asleep. I'm like, that means we did a good job.
Well, I wanted to first quickly say, is there any more sponsorship opportunities? I know we're getting close to the event, but still open for sponsorships?
Absolutely. Yep. So you could go to socialxmke.com or Instagram, Facebook, SocialX. You could DM us or email any of us our info email. And yes, and sponsorship's still available.
And that's the same website where registration's still open for women to attend, right?
Yep. We will have day of registration too, as of right now, but it tends to fill up. So I would tell people to hop on it ASAP.
You said what's the cap?
The cap is about 60, 70. So we do pretty good about filling it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you get breakfast, lunch. So we want to get that all ordered for you. And I have that all set. So
absolutely. And then that's not your only Women's History Month event. You also have another another event called Social Exposure.
Yes. So that is March 8th. So maybe you're thinking of that. March 8th.
International Women's Day?
Yes. That is March 8th. And that is going to celebrate women, all the barriers that they have overcome and how they are continuing to be great women. So I'll highlight five women. This is virtual. So you can hop on during lunch. It will begin at 11:45 a.m. And then hop on virtually to hear about all these women, get that little boost to carry you through the day.
Nice. Well, we might be on air, so if it's recorded, I'll go back and watch that. But that sounds
Absolutely.
Awesome.
We recorded it all.
All right. We Tania, this was so fun. I love all the events that you guys do. I feel like I'm due for one. It's been a minute since I've been able to attend
you
one.
You are.
But you guys do such good work, and these events are so important and very fun. So Tania Fisher, thank you for spending time with us and telling us about the events.
You. Thank you so much for highlighting us. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. And so Tania Fisher is the Director of Health and Wellness for SocialX MKE, a diversity, equity, and inclusion consulting group. And it's just socialxmke.org?
.com.
All right. So you can find that on the website and find everything that you would need to do the go to the event or any of the other upcoming events. Anything else you want to plug? When does FEAR get started again?
FEAR starts April 11th.
All right.
So, yeah, you
remind
could go on
that,
there.
Remind everyone what FEAR is.
FEAR is our running group. So we encourage people of color or all people of all running levels to be able to run in a safe and inclusive space. So that starts April. What did I say? Did I say April 11th?
April 11th.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
We got a calendar in front of us.
I know so many things, but Tuesday, April 11th, if you still want to hop in a run, I am training for the Paris Marathon. I need help. So if anybody wants to run a leg with me at any point between now and the end of March, feel free to DM me or just shoot Kristen something and connect me.
Running this. I have to text you after this. I didn't know you were running a marathon in Paris.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my gosh. All right. Well, Tania Fisher, thank you so much for joining us. We will talk to you again soon. And stick around. This is As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. She is Jane Matinere. And the Oscars, not this weekend, the following weekend.
Yeah, it's
March 12th.
Fast.
I still have a fair amount to go watch before, I don't know.
If you're going to make all of them?
Well, and now I'm trying to think, will I watch? I probably will watch the Oscars. I don't know if Mike will watch it with me. But I also, what is it about the Oscars that, I didn't watch the SAG Awards last night.
I didn't either. And those are usually a little looser.
Yeah. And not as long?
And not quite as long. Yeah, the Oscars are long.
And SAG is fun because I feel like, whether you agree with this or not, as far as being film aficionados and feeling like there's so many people who work on a film that deserve credit, from set to costumes to makeup to sound and everything. But, ultimately, the actors are the one who get a lot of, it's the thing as a layperson, you feel like you can judge, even though you know nothing about acting, versus everything else. And so the SAG Awards, I think, are fun because it's more like the Golden Globes where there's also TV and limited series and stuff like that.
Yep.
But I saw this morning because, of course, we can't forget the drama of last year.
Oh, I almost did forget about that.
Did you? Are you being serious? Are you being sarcastic?
No, I'm serious.
You almost forgot about the slap from last year?
Yeah, maybe I tried to block it out of my brain.
And the weeks of dialogue that it created as far as you can't talk about a black woman's hair and you should never hit someone and what this does, like, oh my God.
What kind of example are you setting?
Yeah. And so this year, the Oscars have a new team to handle real-time crises at the 2023 ceremony. This is not a team that was in place last year, obviously. And the squad created in response to Will Smith's slapping of Chris Rock last year is hopefully just a guy who has like a long hook to pull celebs off stage when they are talking to
him. Like the old days.
But in reality, it is. It's a whole team that's like a crisis team. And
okay, I have a question.
Okay.
So if this had been established last year, what would they have done? Because it's not like Will Smith ran up there and you could see that this was coming. Initially, people didn't know if it was a bit. So what are they going to do? Tackle him?
I don't know. So like the Academy President Janet Yeag previously said that the group's response last year was not swift enough. Because think about it. I mean, he was allowed to just continue to sit in the front row.
Right.
And then win and then give his speech where it like disrupted the entire night. And I think in reality, I feel like they, especially now that he's been banned for 10 years, that they probably would have been like, you got to go. Like, you are distracting from everything else.
Right.
You're ruining everyone else's night. But the CEO, Bill Cramer, said, we have a whole crisis team, something we've never had before, and many plans in place. We've run many scenarios. So it is our hope that we will be prepared for anything that we may not anticipate right now, but that we're planning for just in case it does happen. What do you think the different scenarios are?
And
I feel like last year, would it ever have included an actor slapping one of the presenters?
That is so broad. I mean, that can cover what? Nuclear attack? Domestic terrorism?
Like someone
bad footwear? I'm not sure what does this all cover?
Like what reasonably could happen? Like another attack of some sort of like someone getting in a fight, someone being, they don't serve booze. So it's not like the Golden Globes where unless someone shows up drunk or high.
That it's a big drunk. It's not a big drunken fest.
But I feel like they probably already have. I mean, that's why last year was so wild, is because no one would have expected that. Even thinking about it now, I still remember watching and be like, what just happened? But so simultaneously, literally the week before, so this Saturday, March 4th, is when Chris Rock's live special comes out.
Oh, boy. That should be interesting.
Live from Netflix. It's a new Chris Rock stand-up special, March 4th.
Wow.
So it's the very first live event to stream on Netflix, which it will be interesting.
It will.
And it's the first time I'm sure he's been practicing material in comedy clubs where you can't use your phone and stuff like that. He's probably been working on this for the last year. But what'll be interesting, do you think more people will watch in that first week? More people will watch Chris Rock's special than will watch the Oscars?
Yes.
I think so, too.
Yeah, absolutely, I do.
I think more people are way more interested in to see what he has to say and how he talks about this.
If he talks about it.
Oh, he'll talk about it.
It's no guarantee. You know,
I guess
not.
There's no guarantee, but I feel like in the reality of, and maybe we'll bring this up again on Wednesday when Greg's here talking about comics. But I feel like, because he talked very openly about his divorce for one of his specials. Like, I feel like he's very much, as most comedians are, like using your life.
Bearing your guts.
To write material about. And so I would be very surprised. I feel like, maybe not off the top of my head, but I feel like there's been rumors as far as even when he's been at different clubs practicing stuff, like he's been
working on
material. And so
that's where you go test it out. You take it on the road.
But that was the first conspiracy theory from the, nah, maybe that's too strong of a word. But you know, if there was malintent besides just like if everyone was kind of in on it, because I feel like then Jada Pinkett Smith ended up having some kind of, because I didn't know she had alopecia until that happened. But then all of a sudden, like, she was involved in like a advertisement for a new alopecia drug. And now, like, Chris Rock has a special. So it's like, sometimes you just wonder, you're like, well, did something like this happen just so everyone can make a little bit more money? But I don't want that to be true. Well, all right. What do you know about opera? We're going to learn a lot because a professor of music from the University of Wisconsin just won one of the top awards in opera, and she's going to be joining us to talk about it. Stay with us. This is As Goes Wisconsin. Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry. Jane Matinere is also here per usual, and we are having a little bit of technical difficulty with our next guest, Laura Schwendiger. We're trying to get her on the StreamYard, but unfortunately it says her devices are not connected. So
I did just shoot her an email. Hopefully she's going to see that and can give us a call at 844-967-2789 because she just won this really prestigious award.
Yeah. So I don't know, for as much as you and I know about musical theater, I don't know a ton about opera. But when something is referred to as the most prestigious award for opera, a composer and the composer who won is someone who is in Wisconsin, feels like a good conversation that we should have.
And it's so pretty cool.
And Professor
Schwendiger.
She's a professor at the Mead-Witter School of Music at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. And once we can get her on air, I'm so excited to talk to her more about what the opera was that she won for. And also, she also won the Berlin Prize. She was the first composer to win the Berlin Prize.
Wow.
And so, yeah, really accomplished lady right here in our backyard. And so, but until we do that, we'll try to get her on, but I'm going to let you. You're just trying to figure.
I think we got her.
Oh, great! Well, we are waiting to see if that might be her on the phone. You know, this is again live radio is always very fun, and so I think we got her, Jean.
We do. Laura is joining us on the phone. Laura, thank you so much for joining us today. How are you?
I'm really good. I'm sorry about those technical difficulties. For some reason, the StreamYard wouldn't find my microphone, even though I know I have it, because I've been doing Zoom, teaching on Zoom over the last 2 years. So.
Well, we got you now.
We got you now, and we're so happy. We were just saying, first of all, Jane and I are both big musical theater people, but don't necessarily know a ton about opera. And so we have a ton of questions about that. But first of all, congratulations on winning the Charles Ives Opera Prize for your new opera, Artemisia. Did I pronounce that correctly?
That's absolutely right.
Yay! And so what is the opera about?
Well, the opera is about this amazing Baroque era painter. She was really famous in her own time, and you can imagine in the 1500s, late 1500s, it was kind of rare for women to be famous painters. And as such, she painted in her father's studio. Her father was a known artist, and his works are also in major museums in the world. And as a young woman, she was actually raped by her art tutor. And wow. It was a famous trial. It was kind of like the O.J. Simpson trial of the late 1500s because her rapist was put on trial. She was tortured to verify her testimony. They actually used thumb screws to verify her testimony. And they broke some of her fingers, which is horrible. And in the end, they found for her and they found against her rapist, and she won. And so it was quite a moment for the truth of women to come through. And then she went on to have an incredible career. She painted for the kings of England and for, you know, popes and you name it. She painted incredibly important figures. And her work is in every major museum, really, in the world.
Wow. And how did you come across this story? I've never heard of that story before.
Well, you know, I'm an art lover, and my librettist, the woman that wrote the words for the opera, is an art lover as well. And her name is Ginger Strand. She's also a great author. You know, she's written a lot of books that are quite well known. And Ginger and I actually talked about Artemisius, this kick-ass, wonderful, figure from the Baroque era that just really broke barriers and did these amazing things. And we started reading about her life, and we realized her life was every bit as dramatic, if not more so, than so many operas. And so we thought, you know, why not, like, shine a light on her?
Our guest.
So that's where it went.
Our guest is Laura Schwendinger. She is a composer and the winner of the Charles Ives Opera Prize for her opera, Artemisia. And Laura, one of the things Kristen and I were discussing off the air, and one of the things I wanted to ask you, drama is a big driving force behind, you know, so many movies and television shows, and certainly opera is very dramatic. But movies have a animated option. Are there any operas that are just funny?
Yeah. It's funny that you ask that, because there are these two traditions in opera. There's opera buffa, which is really funny. You know, think about the Magic Flute, or, you know, Mozart wrote a lot of opera buffa, which is about comic relief, really.
Huh.
And then you have opera seria, which is more serious. And Artemisia actually falls within the more serious, area of opera. But I think my librettist and I at some point want to write a really funny opera.
There you go.
You need some whoop 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 boing. You know?
Absolutely.
And so,
yeah,
go ahead.
Oh no, it's just funny that, you know, opera does tend to go the more serious route, but some of the most famous opera composers did stuff that was really akin to musical theater now. You know, Mozart, when he was writing the Magic Flute, he was writing for a bunch of people who were just part of the public who came in. They threw tomatoes when they didn't like what was going on. They wooed and, you know, booed, and they did all of that stuff. That was what was happening at the moment. So he was kind of like, you know, he was like the Mick Jagger of his day.
That's so funny to think about.
Those were tough crowds, man.
Right.
Those tomato-throwing, banana-peel-throwing crowds. Woof.
Exactly.
And so, as you said, the comparison with musical theater and opera, and obviously in most musical theater, there is more spoken word, where in opera there is none. But, like, what for a show where there that's considered musical theater, where there's basically no speaking, what really becomes the differentials of something that makes it an opera versus musical theater?
Really, really good question, Kristen, because, you know, there are some musical theater pieces which are like modern opera. I mean, West Side Story is, by Bernstein, is an incredible musical theater piece. But a lot of people consider it one of, you know, America's first great operas.
Really?
Of that period. Yeah, and the same thing with, you know, Sondheim musicals. So, Sunday in the Park or Sweeney Todd.
Yeah.
You know, if you saw Sweeney Todd live, you'd say, oh my God, this is operatic. And mm-hmm. It is. It has this, you know, depth and kind of bigness that you get in great musical theater, but you also really get in great opera. And the music is really, it's exciting and challenging and orchestral, and it really straddles the line.
It's so interesting that you bring up Sweeney Todd, Laura. I had dinner with a good friend of mine who's a huge theater buff, and Sweeney Todd came up, and he said the movie is terrible. Never watch the Johnny Depp Sweeney Todd movie, because the musical itself is a far different thing.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree. If you can find it, there are videos of Angela Lansbury playing the main role, and Sweeney Todd, and boy, she was amazing.
I actually have seen that. That we watched that in high school, which is funny because that's a musical that probably high school's okay, but much younger than that, I'm not sure you should be watching that
that's
show.
So dark.
It's like, really dark.
Murdering who?
Boys are made out of something you don't want to talk about, you know?
Well, it's funny that you say Sondheim because that's what I think of. Like, my favorite musical almost ever of all time is Into the Woods. And there's that, it really is. Like, I can't really think of many speaking parts. Like, if you listen to the soundtrack, you get the entire story. It's not kind of songs that are punctuated, which for me, my experience, I think I've only seen one opera, and I'm embarrassed to say I can't even remember which one it was, but it is the entire thing is just the expression and through music. And so for you as a composer, what was it that drew you to opera versus an orchestra or different types of music that you could be writing? Like, what was it about this that you were like, well, this is what I'm going to go pursue?
Well, you know, I do write for orchestra and chamber groups. And in fact, I just came back from Atlanta, where the principal harpist of the Atlanta Symphony Orchestra premiered a concerto of mine with the Emory Orchestra, the Emory University Orchestra, celebrating their 100th anniversary as an orchestra. So I write for kind of everything. I think most opera composers these days do, because there's so much opportunity to have, to express yourself in all sorts of different ways. And there are so many fine chamber groups and so many fine orchestras that to limit yourself is a little weird. You know, but I have to say, when you go down the opera rabbit hole, because operas are big. I mean, they're really big. They're a lot of work. They suck a whole year out of your life. And it's a year you enjoy, but I have to say, it's a lot of work. It's like building a 10-story building with your fingernails. You know, that's what it feels like at times.
Laura, what does winning the Charles Ive Opera Prize for your opera Artemisia, what does that do? What does that mean for you going forward?
Well, it's such a huge deal. I mean, this group of panelists. First of all, it's given by the leading academy of artists, writers, every famous person you can think of that's in the arts, every famous writer, every famous artist, every famous composer sits on that stage and is a member of that academy. So just walking on stage with them to get your award, it's like it's freaky.
Yeah.
It's like stargazing. I mean, that's what it's like. And then the panel that chose it are the, you know, five of the most important composers in the world today. And they're people who have been my heroes for a long time. So that's crazy. I mean, that's amazing. And I love them all for this. I mean, I think it's just like shocking that I got it. And then, of course, it brings you to the attention of, you know, opera companies everywhere, we hope. We hope that's where it's going, because we're in the planning for our third opera. And then finally, it's a big chunk of change. It's the biggest award. It's $50,000. So it's the biggest award that's given to a creator of vocal music, I think, in the world.
Wow.
That is so cool.
And it's so funny, because did you come across this just as an announcement through the University of Wisconsin-Madison?
I might have seen it in the Cap Times.
Okay. And because then the other job you have is that you're a professor of music at Madison, right?
Yes.
When you're not composing award-winning operas, you're teaching the young people on how to do this.
Too bad you have no ambition,
and
Laura.
So gifted, man. I mean, I have like the most talented young student composers, but it is a full-time job, and so doing both is hard.
I would imagine. And so, what would you tell someone who claim they don't like opera, but if they've never been to one, what would you tell them to try to turn them on to the art form?
Well, you know, if they like soap opera,
okay.
If they like musical theater, if they like big budget films, there isn't anything like going to an opera, because an opera is so engrossing in terms of as much as the music and the singing, but it's also the stage and the actresses and the actors and the production, which, you know, depending on what house you're at, can be like overwhelming. Just seeing a set change is a moment that sometimes you make your heart just stop, you know? So it is an engrossing thing, and I think at first it's a little daunting because we're, you know, it's not like, you know, hip-hop. People don't listen to opera every single day, right? But if you're able to get tickets to an opera, I really suggest that it's the kind of thing that when you go, you never forget, and a lot of people just get, you know, addicted.
Absolutely. All right, Laura Schwendinger, thank you so much for spending time with us today. Congratulations on the award. We will link everything if you want to learn more about it to our show notes today. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right. Well, we have one more segment left. Stay tuned. This is As Goes Wisconsin. Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry and Jane Madnair. So have you seen much opera?
I have never seen an opera.
Just no interest?
And now I feel ashamed.
Well, don't feel as ashamed that I went to the Vienna Opera House and I can't remember which opera I saw.
Well, how old were you?
I was 33.
Oh, okay. So that was 3 years ago.
It was 3 years ago. And I'm sitting here because I know that we went and I know that it was beautiful. The opera house itself was beautiful. I remember enjoying the opera, and now I can't remember which one actually was. So I don't know which one's more embarrassing, having never gone or having gone into one of the most famous opera houses in the world and not remembering which show you saw 3 years ago.
That is hilarious. I think Laura pointed out something, though, that I'm gonna watch for. I'm going to look for the Magic Flute or some of the funnier, lighthearted, you know, less tragic operas, because I honestly didn't think they existed. I thought it was all angst and war and death and love and heartbreak. And sure, a fair amount of that is. And I thought her equation of opera to soap operas was really good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, it also, I mean, because it makes sense to me as far as it having both, in the same way that Shakespeare was, there was the dramas and there was the comedies. And, you know, because there is the classic masks of the drama and comedy mask, right?
Exactly.
And so I feel like I need to go with you so I can see you have your pretty
my first
woman
experience
moment of when she cries at the opera. Remember?
I'm thinking of Moonstruck, actually.
You know, I've never seen Moonstruck.
Oh, it's a wonderful movie.
John Patrick Shanley wrote that, right?
Sure. I don't know. But Cher is in it.
I do know that Cher is in it.
And Vincent Gardenia.
Isn't Nicolas Cage
Nicolas
in it?
Nicolas Cage is
it's
in
like
it.
He's like very young Nicolas Cage.
Yes, yes, yes. It's a great film. And there is an also, opera is integral to the plot of that show, okay. That movie as well.
Okay. Snap out of it.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
Right? So yep. I know what it is. I just have never seen the whole thing.
I think you would like it.
I probably would.
Yes.
Cher.
Vincent
National
Gardenia.
Treasure.
Woman I'm forgetting now, I could see her. Oh, good heavens, she was in Steel Magnolias.
Sally Fields?
No.
Dolly Parton?
No. She was the rich mayor's wife. Oh, it's going to drive me crazy.
You look it up. But yeah, I'm trying to think. She was lovely, too. I feel like the story that she said that it was based off of was incredible as well.
Isn't it?
As far as just, it's... What was I just watching? I was watching something where people's like, you know what we watched last night? We watched Molly's Game. Have you ever seen Molly's Game?
I have not.
Do you know what it's about?
No.
So it's a true story. Jessica Chastain is the main character, but it's a true story about this woman named Molly Bloom who was like almost qualified for the Olympics, except she fell in her qualifying time and like blew up her back. And so she ended up basically growing. It's like, this is a very truncated version. She basically started the highest stakes poker game in the country. First, she was involved in it in L.A., and then she recreated it in New York. And then she, like, inadvertently got involved with the mob.
Uh-oh.
And so she stopped. 2 years later, she got arrested. And so she wrote a book. Like, it's a fascinating story. And, like, her actual, even in her book, she doesn't name all the names. And that's, like, a centerpiece of the movie is why she will not name names. And so, like, 'cause, like, she had celebrities, athletes, people, like very high power people coming and playing
her games.
Her games. And we were watching that movie last night, and now I forgot what we were just talking about as far as.
Well, I was looking up the actress who starred in Moonstruck along with Cher and Nicolas Cage, and it was Olympia Dukakis.
Oh, yeah, I know what you're talking about. But now why was I going to say Molly's Game? Because I was going to say something else. Now I'm going to have to listen back to the show. I have to remember, since we're almost done in 4 minutes, I'll have to go.
What was I talking about?
Why was I going to talk about Molly's Game, and how did that have to do anything with Moonstruck?
And opera. Only you can know for sure, my friend.
Only I can know. Maybe someone will text in and be like, you were going to talk about this. But we did watch that last night, and it was very good. And, oh, I know what I was going to say. Found it. Granted, Aaron Sorkin wrote, and I think even directed, Molly's Game.
Okay.
And Aaron Sorkin is arguably one of the best living screenwriters alive. And so the whip smart references that the characters have,
the dialogue,
to art and culture and the Crucible and different poems and stuff like, and just things like that, where it's like, I aspire so much to have that kind of referential banter and like the knowledge of arts and history and even pop culture to drop casually in conversation, but I can't even remember why I started a sentence sometimes. So I think my likelihood of accomplishing that may be pretty low.
See, but now I think all we really need to do if we really want to impress people is drop the name Artemisia.
Yeah. Oh, have you seen it? You know, it was a Wisconsin.
Are you familiar with Artemisia?
It's a Wisconsin professor. Won the Charles Ives Opera Award for it.
Let me tell you the story of 15th century painter Artemisia.
It's a pretty name.
It is a beautiful name.
Artemisia.
And again, just knowing, now we're going backwards, but Laura Schwendinger, who was just our guest, teaches at UW-Madison, just won this very prestigious opera prize or arts prize. How cool is it that that's in our own backyard?
I know. I think about that with all the different... You know, we obviously had two different UW professors today with John Sheldon at UW Green Bay and Laura Schwendinger from UW Madison. But just thinking about the talent pool of people who are teaching at our universities, who are experts at what they do, who win prizes that in their field is a really big effing deal.
Yes.
But I would have never known this. I had to research because, as we said, she's also... the Berlin Prize winner, when I had to look that up, but I still don't fully understand what it is, but it sounds like it's literally the first thing on her Wikipedia page. And so now I have to go find what that is. But it's like the amount of people you encounter who are a big deal in their field and live in Wisconsin and work in Wisconsin, but without knowing more about that field, you know, you just don't think twice about it.
We have a lot to be proud of.
We do. We absolutely do. And so, but yeah, that was really fun to have her on that. So now we have to add it to their bucket list. Now we have to go see an opera together.
Absolutely.
Between Milwaukee or Madison, there's probably an opera coming up soon.
This is only like item number 67 on our bucket list. So
the big one is our traveling across the state in a camper. Maybe that's what we'll do.
Oh.
We'll get a camper and we'll retrofit the camper so we can do the show from the camper. And we'll put a big civic media banner on the side, and then we'll just go across the state and do the show from that and stuff like that. I think I'm onto something.
Hey, Brian Kelly, surprise!
Fancy Brian, this is your next project. Make it happen this summer. All right, we'll stick around for the Luke and Brian, Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian, or the Chad Holmes Show. This has been As Goes Wisconsin.